Welcome to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. And by the way, it is live from the Gregory Ricks and Associates studio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, the 401k and retirement authority.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Coming up on the show today, we had a couple of barn burner topics during the week that we're going to spend a little more time going a little more depth on this weekend. Number one, NUA, net unrealized appreciation. Look, sounds a little heady, sounds a little wonky. I know this isn't your old relaxed weekend type of discussion, but really, this what a great tool to save money on moving some of your stocks out of a qualified plan. A lot of people overlook this. We're tired of seeing people overlook it, and we want to save you money doing it. The 4% rule is now the 2.5% rule, maybe even the 2% rule, Gregory. It used to be if you had a big nest egg, the amount of money you could take off of that nest egg without a spin down was 4%, but ultra-low interest rates and the Fed refusing to raise it for the last, what, 7, 9 years, whatever it is, has changed some of the rules of retirement. We've got some great audio from Senator Garrett versus Janet Yellen and Jack Lew. And Gregory, I'm going to spring this one on you. I got a great audio clip from Rick Santelli yesterday. He weighed in on the idea of the Fed delving into equities, which may happen as soon as this coming quarter, because now it's officially the fourth quarter. It's October 1st.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be good. Want to hear that. We've been talking about it for a little while. I know there's a number of things that just people have brought up to me past couple of days. I said, well, we've been talking about that for a while.
Yeah.
Maybe we're just a little ahead of the curve on some topics.
If you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, the phone lines are open. You better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. If you're of the shy persuasion, we have a couple of options for you as well. You hear that buzz? Is that anyone else? Got a weird buzz.
Yeah, there's a buzz.
All right, I can live with that. If you're a little more shy, though, you can text us via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, or you can send us an email to Gregory@GregoryRicks.com. But let's go ahead and update the latest on what was the biggest effect on the market this week, in my opinion, I believe, because last week it was the Fed. Week before that, it was something else. Week before that, it was something else. This one was all about Deutsche Bank, though. The Deutsche Bank versus the Department of Justice. We had an issue at the beginning of the week. We had the scandal as the week progressed, and we had somewhat of a resolution peek its head up early yesterday morning. So it's really cool that we had an entire story kind of start, middle, and beginning in the span of 1 week since last we were in these chairs. But let's do the overview here. You want to do that? You want me to tell the story? All right. Deutsche Bank. Look, like many of the banks, they were handing out some products like candy that went sour in the financial crisis that happened 2008, 2009. And now in hindsight, in the rearview mirror, looks like those weren't such good sells after all.
Mortgage-backed securities.
There you go. So the things that were promised or things that were hoped or even implied definitely failed on the table. Now, for most of us, that's just part of it. There's inherent risk in some of these tools. Mortgage-backed securities are not a risk-free tool. No one's under that impression that they are. But now they're going to be held account for saying, listen, you were promising that these were safe, and they turned out not to be safe. So we're going to come in, and the Department of Justice told the biggest bank from the great country of Germany, we're going to fine you 12.5 million euros, or that would be about $14 billion in American money. Well, I should say real money, right? Because does the euro even count?
Let's go back to, well, talk about stock price for them. When we go back, say, 5 years, they had a price of $50 a share. Go back to 07, $155
a
share for Deutsche Bank. So, yeah, that's what we had mentioned. They had seen the price range of $150 a share in that arena.
Did we say that this week? I don't remember
and
that.
Look, even at the bottom, the lowest point in 08, I said it. It might have just,
yeah.
You know, that happens sometimes.
I miss stuff. I do.
Right over. Lowest point in the Great Recession, the price was $106 a share and 51 cents. Yesterday, it was up 14.02% and closed at $13.09.
What utter destruction.
The biggest bank by far in Germany. The second and third ones aren't even close. It's not a competition.
Okay, so the resolution somewhat came when a tentative deal was announced. This isn't finalized. This is kind of like the OPEC deal. No, it's not finalized yet, but we have a verbal agreement where the Department of Justice said they did say we could make this all go away for $14 billion. Now, Deutsche Bank came back and they're like, well, what about maybe like more like $4 billion? Is that Is that doable?
They gave a number.
Well, I'm sorry. You're right. It went the other direction.
It was like, nah, this isn't going to work at all for us.
Yeah, you're right. I said that backwards. They were offered a $4 billion.
14.
14, but then yesterday the compromise was $4
billion. Yeah, so in between that, they said, we can make this investigation go away for $14 billion and change. And that's when they said, nah, that number's not really going to work for us. So then the next thing, basically charges, suit were filed, such. It was amped up for $14 billion. Coincidentally, that was kind of the same number the EU was telling Ireland to tax Apple on, was $14 billion. We just kind of made that little connection there. And then came yesterday.
And a $4 billion, it's kind of like a plea deal. Does this sound like justice to you, or does this sound like mafia extortion? This is protection money, is what it is.
I don't know. Maybe the that phone call did happen, as I suggest. What are y'all doing? And they said, well, you know, maybe our Justice Department might settle for a $5 billion-ish.
No,
I still don't think that's the number's going to happen.
That's
half of their capitalization.
Well, now, because their stock's been so destroyed, you know.
Yeah, by us, partly.
Right, but
if
it gets back to half of where it was just 4 years ago, then they'll, again, be worth more than Twitter. But I love the picture you painted in my head of in this situation where you have Deutsche Bank. They're not charged with a crime. They didn't break any laws. Who got arrested? Who got indicted? Whose charges? Is there any search warrants? Is there any subpoenas? This is extortion. Angela Merkel picking up the phone, calling the White House or calling some counterparts in D.C. and going, what in the world are y'all doing? What is this all about? Why are you doing this to me? What is up? That's fine. You can go extort all your own banks all you want. And if they want to play along, that's up to you. But we can't afford it over here. Well, now that Britain left, we're the only people that are holding up the entire European Union and European economy on our backs. And you want to come kick us in the teeth? What did we do to you? $14 billion is just a number you came up with out of thin air. When they went after Wells Fargo a couple weeks ago, they fined them $185 billion. And, you know, one of the reactions, and rightfully so, is, look, that's just a drop in the bucket to someone like Wells Fargo. $185 million, please. They can find that in their sock. But on the converse, if you want to look at it from the other angle, the amount of fees that were falsely put on their customers from these ghost accounts, these fake accounts, from which they got in trouble, was just a little under $2 million. So $2 million worth of damage warrants a $185 million punishment. So you can see it coming from both angles. On one side, yeah, that fine's too low. On the other side, that fine's just ridiculously too high for the petty little grievance for which it's based. But in the Deutsche Bank, there is no opposing sides here. That $14 billion is a ridiculous fine. And that's when it dawned on us, that $14 billion number. We just heard that somewhere else. And yeah, it was from a cross-Atlantic issue, but this was an EU issue going after an American company doing business in Ireland. That's the exact same number that the EU claimed Apple needs to pay up. So this sounded kind of like a quid pro quo. So now what we're looking for, that we've seen the Deutsche Bank issue progress yesterday, if something similar happens with the Apple situation, we know this is one of those behind closed doors in a smoke filled room, behind the peering eyes of the media and the public, there's deals being made.
Yeah, and there's more trouble than Deutsche Bank in Germany. The number two bank, Commerzbank in Frankfurt, laid off 10,000 employees. That's a lot of banking employees.
Yeah, and really, these banks, there's only 80 million people in Germany.
Yeah.
So for whatever, if you want to think about it proportionally, that's about one-fourth the size of America.
Yeah.
So
Commerzbank just basically say, we're trying to get back to profitability.
Is that how you do it? No, these people weren't making you money and helping customers and helping bring in money. Why'd you have them employed in the first place? This is the natural result more so of the negative interest rates that they've been living under, because the products they've been selling, they have to give away money for people to take them. That is not a sustainable business model. That can work in the severely short term, but if they stay at negative interest rates, what's the point of a bank?
Yeah, let's see. We've got hedge funds pulling business from banks. Well, look, in your negative interest rate world, think about it. People aren't dying to go bring money there to do transactions.
To slowly lose money.
I know how people are going to do here if that ever happened. they will be pulling it and going somewhere else. We have so many people that micromanage, and this is a positive term, is they're hunting for yield. They're just not going to say, oh, okay, we'll give you this, and they're going to be fine. No, no, they're shopping, figuring out how to get the most yield when there isn't any.
Deutsche Bank going to pay this?
No, not the five.
Well, I think Deutsche Bank, here's what I think is a possibility, and I'm probably less than 50-50 in here. There's a possibility they accept it, and whether it's made public or not, Angela Merkel foots the bill with tax dollars.
You think Bloomberg was, you asked me a question there, I'm still on Commerce Bank.
No. I was just saying, I bet you there's a chance they take the deal and Merkel bails them out, either covers it in public or behind closed doors, or covers half of it, or gives them a subsidy, or gives them a big tax break or tax credit or something.
They just don't have the money, so it's almost you're going after Germany.
Exactly.
To do this. You know, so Germany's going to have to bail out Deutsche Bank. You have Commerce Bank, the chief executive officer, Martin Ziegelk, I guess that's how you say it, plans to reduce about
one in You got
to
say it German. You got to say it.
Ziegelk.
Martin Ziegelk.
Okay, that's your job. Commerce Bank will cut about 9,600 jobs, merge its Mittelstand Bank, catering to small and medium-sized company. That's a fifth of its workforce they're shedding, and taking costs to do this overhaul of about $1.2 billion.
All right, if you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995, or you can text us via the Gregory Ricks & Associates app. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back. This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks. We do this every Saturday, 10 to 1. If for some reason you can't get to your regular radio air feed, we're always on the stream. Just go to iHeartRadio.
All right.
James is looking at me. Yeah. There's always a glitch once in a while, but we're on it. Go ahead.
We intend to always be on a show.
We intend to always be on, and if we're not, believe me, I'm on it.
All right, so
we'll get it fixed.
If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, a couple ways to get in touch with us. 504-260-0995. If you're more the texting variety, do the Gregory Ricks & Associates app. You can float us a text message via the Gregory Ricks & Associates app. You can do it the old school way, gregory@gregoryricks.com. If you want to float us something in the old email box, we'll take that as well. We're just checking out different social media options. Right now, if you go to the Winning at Life Facebook page, you can see the live feed via Facebook Live. Wave, Gregory. A couple people in there. Hey, how's it going? And then I had Periscope going, but it just crashed. I'm about to start it back up. These computers.
Yeah, at our weeknight studio, that works really well. On our Saturday studio we're using here, it's a little more difficult. But I tell you what, it was rocking the other night. We had like 10,000 people show up in our Winning at Life Periscope room. Everybody needing a little financial help.
Not an exaggeration there.
No,
10,000 people.
We have a picture of the stats from that show. Unbelievable. It's periscope.tv/Gregory Ricks. What about Facebook? How did they get there?
You go to the Winning at Life Facebook page.
Yeah.
And I just posted it up there.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll be right there in the feed.
Link right there to tap and go forward. A couple of things, you know, they print the news for me daily, a couple of the papers, and Wall Street does it for me. I'm connected. Yeah, they print this online news. A couple things caught my attention. One, and I've heard of this happening before, postal worker hid piles of mail at home. That's just like collecting mail, I guess. Former postal worker in Tennessee reached a plea deal after she was accused of keeping nearly 2,700 pieces of undelivered mail inside her home. News outlets report Kathy Gross, pleaded guilty to obstruction charge in Greenville federal court on Tuesday. She faces up to 6 months in prison and a $5,000 fine.
Kathy, what are you doing?
She first was investigated in November after they discovered she had failed to complete deliveries on her route and missed multiple parcel scams. Scans, not scams. Parcel scans where they'll deliver something and they use their little handheld computer thingy and just do a scan shows that it was actually delivered. Investigators said they found piles of undelivered mail throughout her home, some hidden under clothes, other in trash bags. And Gross said she panicked and had become depressed while going through a divorce. I guess all that mail is very depressing. She said, how much
yeah, doing your job is
do I have to tote every day?
Well, Kathy put it under clothes. Yeah, they'll never find it there. Good job.
Yeah. Did they give a number how many pieces of mail was found?
Yeah, they gave a weight. What good does that do us?
2,700 pieces. Jeez. Undelivered mail in her home.
See, it's not that that she liked collecting mail. She didn't like delivering it. All right, to the phones we go. 504-260-0995. This is Dewey in Gramercy. You're first up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Dewey?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I was interested in you were saying that people would be looking for alternatives as far as getting interest on their savings. What are you suggesting as a viable alternative in today's environment?
Can you turn off that radio in the background? As much as I love my voice,
I
don't like it twice.
Hang on, I'll go turn it off.
Okay.
Thanks, Dewey.
We get these questions a lot. Call-ins during the office hours, you know, from basically 8 to 5 at the office.
That's better.
You back with us,
did
Dewey?
Did your ears go away?
Excuse me. Okay. I knew better. I was just being lazy.
It's quite all right, Dewey. All right, options. We used to, and when I started my first little savings account back in the late 80s, because I'm 100 years old now, you can put your money in the bank and get 3%, 4% just on a savings account. You could even get a percent on your checking account.
You almost have to think of it differently. And one,
those days have changed.
Oh, yeah. It's gone.
Really no yield out there thanks to a few Federal Reserve chairmen, and they think differently about their job than what was intended when it was created, I think, in 1918 there. And they did
14. We did this yesterday. You made
okay, well, I'm getting closer each time. Look, it's a long time ago when you think about it, and it's a complete different world, but they... And we got some more to cover on the Federal Reserve later in the show, so I won't get there.
There is yield.
Yeah,
it's questionable about the safety of it. Like, for instance, you could get leveraged high yield bonds and get 12% a year.
I had a client in now a few months ago, and she was showing me her money. She's, you know, somewhere $1 million in CDs, and she's getting 2.5 on a 5-year rate. I said, that's pretty darn good. I said, we on the timing of that, we probably would have got her 3 on 5-year CD or multi-year fixed annuities there. I said the advantage would be you wouldn't be taxed on those earnings unless you actually took it out, where bank CDs are going to tax you there. So remember, the rates are moving around, and we're probably a little bit on the lower side right now, but we start moving towards a possible rate hike. You'll see 10-year treasuries start moving back up. Let's see, what are they at today? Yeah, they're at 1.597. So they'll probably move down a little bit. We get a correction or something like that. More volatility in the markets coming up with the election and possible rate hike, a possible Deutsche Bank failure, and who knows what else can pop its head up in the next 90 days. If money's leaving the market, it's typically heading towards bonds and putting pressure on the yield there to move it down. So it's kind of a law and supply thing. Now, fixed interest CDs, but the sweet spot, I think, is 5 years. Like, if you're moving to a 3-year something, yeah, you're moving under 2%, maybe even under 1.5 on the shorter term. But it also, Dewey, depends on the purpose of the money. If it's emergency money, you're needing liquidity. You need to accept that quarter point or 0.1% or whatever the bank could give you on a savings account. Once we get outside of emergency money, then maybe that's interim money. I'm needing to put this someplace for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Or your thing might be laddering CDs or those type instruments that give you absolute yield and protection. To move above that, well, how can I get a little bit more yield? Then you're probably looking at treasury type ETFs would be a good move. But those things, remember, they're going to move around a little bit. So you have to think of it. There's one, I'll give an example of MINK, and I'm not sure quite what the yield is.
I'm sorry, did you say MINK?
Yeah, it's M-I-N-C.
Okay.
You can go look it up on Google Finance. And basically, it's short duration bonds, mostly, is what's in that. And I kind of look at it, it's now, for example, if you go throw your money in a money market, let's say they give you 0.5%. They guarantee you that 0.5%. But you think about it, they have to go put money somewhere else. So they're probably going to the bond market using short duration bonds. And let's say they're getting 2.5 there. So they guaranteed you half. They know the interest rates are probably going to move up back and forth and could as much go against them by 1%. So, okay, there's your 1.5. They're giving you 0.5. They know this thing can move 1%. It's paying a monthly dividend, and they're making 1%. Or even think about it. What if they were saying, we're going to have risk of 1.5%, we're going to net 0.5, and we're paying Dewey 0.5%. So instead of you being the guy that takes that 0.5%, can you tolerate movement of about 1% while getting 2.5% dividend? So you're becoming the middleman instead of the guy at the end with the lowest rate. That's some to think about it. And we combine a number of those to do what we call a balanced income portfolio that we kind of have an expect. Well, I'll just put it this way. The annual dividend's 3.1%, and we expect some appreciation. But you got to be able to accept a little bit of movement there. And that's how we go about getting yield. You either got to give that money some time, or you've got to accept a little bit of movement in that when you're doing something like a combination of treasuries and short duration bonds.
There is yield.
There is. You just have to work for it. It's just not going to show up and get it.
Shell oil, I think, is 7%.
Well, no, that's going into a whole nother arena because you're talking about picking up risk and more volatility, more movement. We're talking about somebody saying, gosh, I used to get 4 on my CD and now all I'm getting is 1.
That's not there.
Yeah, well, there is in that range of 2.5 to maybe 3.5%, but you got to work for it a little bit and have a little bit of tolerance. CD annuities could get you 2.5 to 3 with no risk, but if you're more of focusing on dividends, that's a different conversation, but you got to be careful because of corrections, possible bubbles bursting, and understand that there's going to be more movement that could go against you. Great question, Dewey. Thanks for joining us on the show today.
Yeah, no free lunches, Dewey. If you want to get yield, you got to give up liquidity or risk or safety. 504-260-0995. I got a Facebook question for you next, Gregory. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Tailgate call, get drunk on you with no alcohol. If you don't stop, I'm going. Well, girl, you make me want.
Welcome back to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks and James Parker. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 1. This is live radio, either on your air feed of your local station or on the iHeartRadio app. We do this weeknights as well. Our show is live. Local markets, and on the stream at 7 o'clock every evening as well.
Yes. Biloxi people, are you getting used to hearing us on Saturdays yet? We love having you around. If you want to get some financial advice from Gregory, 504-260-0995. Go into the Facebook Live video. James Nolan left a comment. And I'm sorry, James, I got a little distracted by his profile picture. He's holding a fish. Apparently, he's on a boat, and he just caught it. It's so big and so pretty and so shiny, and it's colored perfect. It doesn't even look like a real fish. This looks like he's staged. It looks like one of the... It's just too perfect. It looks like someone drew it like in a comic book. But James' question is, I'm going to have to take money out of my IRA to fix up my flooded house. Do you think Congress will pass the Tax and Penalties Relief Act? Now, we talked to Senator Cassidy about that just about a month ago. He spent a whole segment with us. He got into all kinds of nuance. So I posted the link to that. The video for it's on our the Winning at Life blog on WRNO.com. But I don't know if that part was necessarily in there. Can you recall that from memory?
What he's asking about, if I do a 60-day rollover, are they going to give an extension? And I think they gave an extension up to 6 months back in Katrina. This is only talking about tax relief applies to deadlines beginning August 11th. As a result of affected individuals and businesses will have until January 17th to file returns and pay any taxes that originally were due during the periods, including September 15th deadline for making quarterly estimated tax payments and October 17th deadline for 2015 income tax returns on extension related payments, however, are not eligible for relief. And this is nothing discussed here about 60-day rollover relief at this time.
Okay, so that's a negative there.
But so if you grab it, you need to make sure you have capability of putting it back if they don't give any type of relief for this impacted area.
But worst case scenario, if you can't put it back in time, you just have to pay the taxes on what you took out, maybe a penalty on top of that? You think they would at least waive the penalty on that?
Well, you know, this has gotten a lot more complicated. You can only do one 60-day rollover.
Aggregate?
Aggregate of all accounts for 12 months, for a 12-month period. So you can't do it through multiple accounts like you could last time. And they did give relief to go after those funds. And I'm just not hearing any chatter about that. But, hey, we know back last year that budget agreement they did, there was no chatter before, and then within 72 hours they had changed social security strategies were greatly impacted by something that didn't have chatter before. So with that said, that doesn't mean they won't do it. It's just, I don't know, what is Congress doing? Are they here stateside right now? Or
yeah, they just went out of session and they'll be chilling for most of October.
Oh, they were in session?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They had the failed budget thing. They had to override a veto on something that doesn't matter anyway.
Okay.
I'm so unhappy with everything that's going on up
Maybe
there.
Maybe they'll really get back to work next year.
It's you know, one of the few instances where I see a president veto something and I'm like, oh, I like that. That's great. And then Congress went and overrode it. They hadn't done it before. It's like, y'all finally override a veto. And it's something I disagree with. I was in the weird position of supporting it for a second there. Jim and Slidell, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. Hey, if you want to be next, 504-260-0995. What's up, Jim?
Hey, my mother-in-law passed away here about 2 months ago. And she has a house in Alaska and one down here. The one down here she's giving to her daughter. But the one in Alaska she's got in the will to be sold and split up, some money going to the five grandchildren and the rest being divided up between her three kids. And I know if they do over $14,000 that you got to worry about gift tax. But because this is an inheritance, I believe there's a form he's got to fill out to keep that from happening.
Well, everybody's getting a step-up basis on the value of it.
Right.
Yeah, there's a 1040 form for that. Your tax professional should be able to help you with that. If they don't understand it, here's the deal. Let's say they've had the house forever, kind of, and they originally bought it for $20,000 and now it's worth $200,000. You guys are inheriting each an interest in that house. So the objective is for it to be sold. So let's say they... After her death, date of death, it was valued at $200,000, and it should be valued right now if it hasn't. And let's say ultimately you sell it for $220,000 above that appraisal at death. You're taxed on that $20,000 in gain that all of you are splitting up. That's the tax bill right there.
Right. Well, I realize that.
Okay.
When he distributes the money from her estate, when each of the kids get the money...
It has nothing to do with gift tax. She's not gifting any money. She's
right.
It's in her estate for that to be split. So, yeah, this would have been her doing something like that before death.
Was she worth more than $5.5 million?
No.
Cool?
She's got a place that's... they sold it for about $300,000. She owes, like, $90,000 on it. So,
Yeah, well, that gift tax isn't going to apply, Jim. You're in the clear there. You, like you said, you may have a capital gains on your hand, but that's going to be piddly compared to what you're worrying about right here. I can hear it in your voice.
Yep.
Okay. Well, smooth sailing there, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye. Yeah. One of Wes is coming up in the second hour, and one of the things we're going to talk about, which came up recently in a meeting, and that's regarding community property, usufruct, and children inheriting part of the estate. And let's say there's mortgage and other obligations on that property. So we have, say, the wife inheriting half the property, his kids inheriting the other half of the property. How is all that handled when there is obligations and we have multiple owners of it? So going to be a great discussion. It's something I haven't heard talked about, and we haven't talked about it on Winning at Life before. So that's coming up in about
20 minutes.
Going to be some great conversation.
All right. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. I'm going to check the Facebook feed. You want to check the digital inbox there? We were talking about annuities. You want to just pick it up where we left off?
Yeah, we can pick up that. Let me grab this.
Because that was one of the answers for our first caller. That was Dewey, wasn't it? Dewey over in Gramercy.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I wanted to touch on. A couple of things here. With volatility coming and there's no yield, people are looking for other safe financial tools to do so. Here's the negative on annuities. It's called a surrender period. It is liquid, but with a fee, which is fine. I'd rather pay a fee than it be illiquid or telling me I can't take it out for 10 years or 20 years, or we don't know when it's going to be liquid for you. I want that option. So on annuities now, one thing we were talking about with Dewey earlier, and let's relate it to, instead of looking at a CD annuity where you're getting, and they technically it's called multi-year fixed interest annuity. So you're getting a rate for a specific period of years, then it comes up for a renewal and you'll get an offer on that, or you can move that money elsewhere if you want to keep it tax deferred. A 1035 exchange allows you to move growth inside of annuity to another annuity account and keep it tax deferred. Same thing moving life insurance cash value to an annuity with 1035 exchange. If there was taxable gains there, it moves over. Now shifting to where we were talking about going specifically from, say, hey, that CD's not getting it done for me. I need a bit more yield than that. So we were talking about using some ETFs, for example, exchange traded funds, which what ETFs are capable of is to trade at the market just like a stock. You don't have to wait to 3 o'clock to get out of it. We're going to have to continue this after the break, of course, here. But when we're talking about leveraging, okay, we're doing that with ETFs. I'm going to tell you how to do that instead of with ETFs, how to do it with a fixed annuity and not have any potential for negative movement.
All right. If you have a question, financial situation, and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995, or email us Gregory at GregoryRicks.com. I'm James Parker. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. All right, welcome back to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Just a second, Barrett and Mandeville, sit tight, we'll get to you. Just need to finish this discussion here because we kind of had to interrupt Gregory mid-sentence, and I want him to finish that thought before we get to you. So we were in the middle of the discussion, and it's the general overall problem that so many people are having. Where do you get yield? It used to be so easy 20 years ago. This is a new paradigm. People are still learning it.
Yeah, we had the Dewey call earlier regarding interest rates, and I talked about some ETF options, but you know, some people just don't want that swing at all or that little bit of movement in money. So then you can go to fixed interest annuities, and then sometimes, you know, if you're wanting to have something more like a little more leverage, like that ETF scenario, you can use a fixed indexed annuity. You're going to extend your surrender period, or think of it as a duration like a bond. You could treat it as bond-like, but you don't have the bond risk. You don't have interest rate risk, credit risk, default risk, or possible negative movement. But what we're looking at is what we're really doing is leveraging the interest rate by linking it to some indexes, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the Dow, S&P 500 and such, but it gives you the potential for more yield over time. These tools do not get bothered by interest rate hikes. Actually, it's more of a benefit because it's kind of like swinging a door. You're getting a larger hinge, which can leverage a bigger door, or more interest rate that can give you more leverage to collect the or capture the upside of the indexes that you're linking to. And there is various types of indexes. It's not just that you have to tie to the market in that case, and gives you the opportunity to make more yield. And you can think about it over the next 10 years, how much might interest rates go up? I know, not very much. Okay, but still, maybe over 10 years, we've got a potential of maybe getting the Fed to give us another full interest increase over that. And that would help leverage quite a bit, even if we could just get a quarter point a year for a few years. Maybe that would help. But that gives you another tool or arrow to make more money. Something to consider if you're looking at fixed interest, fixed indexed annuities. There's other things to consider. I suggest you call my office for a second opinion if somebody's trying to get you into that, because you got to think about exits, what's your options, quality of the company, make sure your money's safe. And most importantly, does it correlate to the other things you're doing with the rest of your money? And my office number for during the week is 504-832-9200.
All right. I appreciate your patience and waiting here. This is Barrett in Mandeville. You're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Riggs. How can we help you, Barrett?
Yeah, good morning. Three brothers inherited a house. We got the succession 25 years after the second parent died. Now we want to sell the house.
Hey, Barrett, this speakerphone or whatever you're on is not going to work. I don't know if you're on an earbud, headset, Bluetooth, something like that. But it's atrocious. Can you just go to the handheld?
Yeah, just a moment.
Okay.
Is that better? I turned off the speakerphone.
Yes. Now we can understand you, Barrett, because I think I got maybe every third word. Let's try again. Sorry about that.
No, thank you. Three brothers inherited a house. We finally got the succession after 25 years after the second parent died. Now we want to sell the house and split the money. The one brother's been living in the house and wants to get paid back for paying the property tax and the insurance, even though he paid no rent, which would have been much higher. So does he deserve to get that that money back for 25 years of property tax?
Wait, is this even a legal question or an ethical question?
Are you one of the brothers?
Yes, I am, but okay. I'm not living in the house.
Kind of what we're going to cover with Wes in a few minutes when he comes on the air with us in the next block, and he's an estate planning attorney. And yeah, he's gotten a pass on it, but is that necessarily fair to the others if we're all trying to be equal and get paid use? Because if you rented it to a third party at fair market, you all three would have profited from that.
Correct.
And it
yes.
would have covered the taxes and so forth.
Definitely.
And that's pretty much, you know, you could have that discussion, but, you know, if he's not well, look, is he going to move out of it for you to be able to sell the property?
He's going to have to. Sell it.
Okay. That other discussion would be, hey, we're going to make this right when we settle up. And you could go with fair market numbers at that point. But we're going to, I'm sure Wes is listening while he's waiting outside the studio. So when he comes in shortly, we're going to ask him this question, if you can stick around for maybe another 10 minutes listening to the show. I'm sure you will.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Barrett, let me ask you this. This was your brother growing up. How many times have y'all gotten into fist fights and actually punched each other?
Not since we were 5 or 6
years old. Oh, no, of course. But don't you have that inherent pushback? It's like, excuse me, brother, you just lived there rent-free for the last however span of time. You're lucky we don't come after you for lost rent. Taxes, nothing. We did you a favor. You didn't do anyone a favor.
I go back. I think you can settle it up at the sale of the property and say we're going to take consideration for this.
Well, it's going to come down to a judge, I guess. So what do you think the judge would say?
Fair market values is the judge is probably going to settle it. We've got some other scenarios we're going to, like, once again, we're going to discuss in the next hour, and this, some of this might come to a judge settling it up, but hey, they all have an ownership stake.
Tell you what, Barrett, we're talking to Wes in just 10 minutes. We'll discuss this, and if we don't get your issue covered, feel free to call back. Can we do that?
One other question for...
The brother living there does not want to leave, and he does not want the house to be sold. But if I force the sale of the house, then it's going to go to a court to decide if he gets consideration.
He's liking this free rent deal. So did you have any conversation or verbal agreement, obviously not written, but did you have a verbal on a rent deal?
He agreed to pay rent, but he forgot that 25 years ago.
Oh, yeah, okay. I forgot about that. Whoops.
Okay, well,
stay tuned, Baird. Your scenario will be continued in the next segment. Dennis in New Orleans, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Dennis?
Well, I'd like to find out. I would want to put the maximum amount of money I can into. I have a 403B and also have an IRA, and I'm 64 years old, and I know there's an amount that you can use for catch-up. But can you tell me the maximum amount of money that I can put into, like that 403B?
Yeah, give him a second. He's got to pull up the paperwork over here. I say paperwork. There's no paper involved. He's got to pull up the digital screen of some sort.
401Ks, you're getting up to about $24,000 in contributions.
And 403B?
403B is $18,000. Participant is limited to $18,000 in 2015 and 2016. And you have that $6,000 catch up, which gets you up to $24,000 in that case.
Okay. If I take, by the end of the year, and put $24,000 into the 403B or the IRA, is there an advantage or a disadvantage of putting it in either one, or can it be rolled over at another time if you make a decision that you're going to do something else with that money? Is there any kind of things I kind of need to be aware of before I do it?
There are some rules regarding the IRA, whether it's deductible or not, being that you have a company plan and income limits might tie to it, but with that said, you can put up to $24,000 in the 403B, and you can contribute $6,500. That's $5,500 plus the $1,000 catch up in your IRA, being you're over age 50.
Okay. And I thought I had one other question. Might have slipped my mind. No, I think that's it.
Okay. If you think of it later or another question comes up, we're right here live on iHeartRadio.
Thank you, Dennis.
Appreciate your help. Thanks very
much. Appreciate it. Well, we just, 504-260-0995. We got Wes Blanchard coming up in just about 5 minutes. And with a minute left here, Gregory, who's the highest paid NFL player? I'm not talking about his contract. I'm not talking about his base salary. I'm talking about his base salary plus the bonuses he actually made last year plus his endorsements.
Brady.
Cam Newton. Cam Newton's number one.
Wow.
Yeah. But
what a leap in a year, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's all about the bonuses. Tom Brady didn't make it to the Super Bowl. Cam Newton did. So he got a little.
What was his bonus?
Let's see. Cam. Nope. That's Von Miller. Cam Newton. He made, he has a $103.8 million contract. What did he actually make last year, though? I should have highlighted that.
It don't matter. Is he going to get that bonus this year for the Super Bowl? It's not looking like it. Things got to change.
Tom Brady has a 50-50 chance of making it to the Super Bowl. Every year he's been a starter. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah, but just think about it. Cam had a great start last year, but they're just not quite there. Kind of similar boat Saints are in.
Number two, Eli Manning. And then Joe Flacco, then Tom Brady, then Russell Wilson.
Oh, hard times for Tom.
All right. Yeah, right. Hard times. Wes Blanchard coming up next, the estate planning attorney, the Total Wealth Authority. So if you have a financial question or an estate planning question, wills, trust, powers of attorneys, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. This is where you can get your financial fix today for a better tomorrow. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, 401k Retirement Authority. We're live here. We do this from 10 to 1 every Saturday. Weeknights, we do it at 7. If you can't pick us up on the air feed, you can pick us up on the stream at iHeartRadio.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Coming up in this hour, we're going to talk to Wes Blanchard. But our estate planning attorney is only going to be here for an hour. We're going to get back to some financial news of the week. After that, we got to talk 4% rule. We got to talk NUA. And we got some great audio from the New Jersey Senator, Senator Garrett versus Janet Yellen, Senator Garrett versus Jack Lew, our Treasury Secretary. And you're going to hear Rick Santelli flip his lid about the idea of the Fed starting to get into the equities world. If you have a financial or estate planning issue, you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory / Wes, 504-260-0995. You can send us a text message via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, or you can do the old-fashioned way, Gregory at GregoryRicks.com. You still do the whole email thing. Email is basically like my real mailbox, where I just sort through all the junk for maybe a kernel of something useful every once in a while, and most days it doesn't happen. Is that what it's, email is now reflective of snail mail? Is that about right?
Seems to be heading that direction.
All right, Wes, first things first. Did you hear Barrett's call?
I heard a portion of it. Greg and I were talking about it on the break there. And so if you guys want to give a quick rundown of the facts just to make sure that I'm not missing anything, but I do think I know what direction it's heading.
Two brothers inherited a property. They had three brothers inherited a property. One of the brothers had a verbal agreement. I don't think he said written, but a verbal agreement that the brother living in the house would pay the rent. And how the caller put it is he kind of forgot that after a period of time. And it's been quite a good bit of water under the bridge at this point. They want this, the caller, it sounds like him and the other brother not residing there, want to sell it. And he implied that the one living in the house doesn't want to sell the house. Why would he? He's got a pretty good deal going.
Yeah.
So they were wondering, could they make up or be credited for all that missed rent?
So, look, the chances of them being credited for all that missed rent, especially when it's just verbal, are slim. Now, look, oral contracts are valid in Louisiana to a certain extent.
Not enforceable, though, right?
Well, they're valid and enforceable. It just depends on your actions after the contract is put into place, and that's in air quotes there. If you're going to continue to allow him to stay there without rent, well, you know, that for a long period of time, I thought I may have heard 25 years.
Yeah. That's what it sounded like.
Just a quarter of a century. Right.
That's kind of hard to enforce.
Right.
If they had done that, say, in the first year.
Correct.
Maybe
correct.
Two.
So you kind of have this passive action that indicates, well, look, you weren't all that serious, and maybe what you guys were talking about wasn't actually solidified. But I mean, did he even make one payment? We don't know.
No.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm not sure about either, but he quickly forgot about that agreement is how the brother put it.
All right. So certainly just even tossing the rent issue aside, it sounds like, again, they want to sell. There's three brothers. And as we discussed, look, when you have a majority that wants to sell, and it's assuming it's all split evenly, there's three brothers, each has an equal ownership. The two brothers do have a right to go and request that this property be what's called partitioned in legal terms. And they have another fancy term. It's called partition by licitation, which is just absurdly annoying, right? I mean, that's the kind of thing where those are the terminologies that require attorneys
Hang
and
on.
Stuff like that.
I'm raising my hand like a kid in class.
Sure.
Did you say licitation?
Yes. And so, look, all that means is we want to break this thing up via a sale. And of course, they use terminology like that to make it to where a layman can't figure that out without doing research and whatnot. It, like I said, just a frustrating issue altogether.
Is that like the base word for solicitation?
It could be. I'm not a Latin expert. Never took a class in Latin, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Not an etymologist.
Here we go. nonetheless, they do have that right. And so, especially with it being a sort of two versus one situation, I would think that the judge is going to be inclined. And that's where that bit of story saying, hey, look, we also, by the way, agreed that he would pay rent. That's actually going to cut in favor, in their favor, if they were to get in front of a judge and say, look, judge, we got two out of three that want to sell. And the one that doesn't want to sell, here's the reason he doesn't want to sell. He's been getting it rent free for 25 years here, you know, despite our agreement and things like that. So, yeah, they do have a right. Unfortunately, it might have to go to court. But, you know, if he can get that information to the moocher, if you will, maybe it'll be avoided, because I don't see the result being any different whether you go to court or not.
The other half of the dispute, the brother living in the house rent free for a quarter of a century is now looking at the other brothers and saying, hey, if we're going to sell this house and split it evenly, I need to be reimbursed and be made whole for all the property taxes and insurance payments I've been making on this house for the last quarter century. Does he have a case?
So, all right, the civil code lays out a variety of different circumstances for a situation like that. But essentially what you need to look at is offsetting ordinary and necessary maintenance and repairs and payments and things like that, which do include insurance and taxes and things like that. Those are offset by exclusive use of the property. So when you take this fact scenario and roll it out, you say, okay, well, one brother's paying the taxes and the insurance. Well, yeah, he's also the only one using it. And so in turn,
I don't see how he gets reimbursed
exactly,
for that.
Exactly. And so it makes logical sense when you think about it. So he's not going to be entitled to any reimbursement because he's the only one using that property.
Yeah, I'd say, okay, yeah, we'll reimburse you once we get the rent.
No, exactly. So he may...
And it's split three.
Had he been paying the rent for 25 years, maybe he would have an argument to say, hey, well, yeah, I mean, exclusive use, sure, but I've also been paying it down, so it's cost me to exclusively use the property. So it's not necessarily just an even wash. I do need my money back. But when you live there rent-free for 25 years, and then you got the gall to ask for money back. I mean, come on, what judge in their right mind is going to say, yeah, you know what? I'm really feeling sympathetic towards you today. Let's, you know, we'll deny the sale and you get your money back. No way. No way.
Good. Cause
they're not getting together on Friday night watching high school football and drinking a beer, are they?
Doesn't sound like it.
They're going to have an awkward Thanksgiving. Someone's going to have to sit at the kiddie table if he doesn't watch it. But this is good because, you know, sometimes you're not that definite. You're like, well, there's a little gray area here. It could go either way. You're like, nah, this is.
Yeah, this is pretty much controlled by codal provisions, and it's all just flatly applicable in this fact scenario. So
codal provisions.
Yeah, I know.
Is that right next to licitation in the lawyer glossary?
That one's not too bad. Not too bad. At least it's a word that you've heard before.
Have you ever said codal outside of the legal world?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I haven't.
No. That's a fact.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Wes Blanchard. He's our estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority. So did we solve all of Barrett's issues, or at least the ones he brought up in his call? Do we feel comfortable with this?
It sounds to me like we did. Now, obviously, if there's part of it that I didn't hear or that we didn't address, you know, certainly give us a call or shoot us a text or an email, whatever works for you, and we can address it from that perspective. But yeah, it sounds to me, like I said, it's kind of a cut and dry situation.
Now, you and I talked about over the past couple weeks another situation that came up, and it's something we've never really addressed. We're always talking about this community property usufruct, or the spouse getting half interest, the kids, whether from that marriage or previous, getting a half interest in the property. And then, you know, we never discuss really about mortgages and bills and repairs and obligations. We had a lady come in to the office, and we're talking about her assets and what she's needing in income. And she's got a mortgage payment to make. And we know her husband had died not too long ago. And she's, you know, things are a little bit tight, and she has a mortgage payment. And then I kind of asked her, I said, are the kids kicking in on this? She said, no, they're not doing anything and they don't want to talk about it. But they, if there's money sitting around, they want their interest in it and have. Well, the thing is, in this part of the story is all of a sudden you don't hear from them. Daddy dies. They all showed up for their parts. And that's when I said, I need just a minute here. And that's when I went and talked to you and you joined us in a meeting. And, you know, first off is, okay, there's repairs being done. Who gets to partake in that, or should all owners? And then the other part is going to be, who is partaking in the mortgage? And she's been making mortgage payments now for about 2 years with no help. And you know what? She needs some help. So when we've got a break coming up here, so when we come back, I want to kind of delve into this subject area that I think is very enlightening. And I knew you would be the guy to really throw this over to. So if you've got some questions regarding estate planning, we have one of the best there is here, Wes Blanchard. He might not can say he's the best, but I can say he is because he's great to work with. Give us a call here at the studio, 504-260-0995. Email me, Gregory at Gregory Ricks. Go to the app also or the website.
I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back. This is Winning at Life. It's the weekly wrap with Gregory Ricks and James Parker. We have Wes Blanchard of W.J. Blanchard Law in studio. I mean, I've got a couple things. You know, once again, I read these papers. You know, they used to call them the newspaper. James says, oh, they print the news that's online out.
Yeah, they printed out their whole website.
Yeah, print the whole website. But it's just something, a couple things. We're going to talk about the rig counts and all in the next hour. But something else caught my attention because we talk about this city, New Orleans, kind of where our home base is, kind of being out of money. And I've said in the past years, you know, maybe we should sell some assets like a railroad. Look at what's the headline there?
Sell the public belt rail.
Dude, yeah, they have 20 miles of track. The values they had earlier this year, KPMG was asked to evaluate it, and they gave us a value of this railroad somewhere between $61 million and $196 million.
Sounds kind of piddly for a
railroad.
Well,
I tell you what, you can go ahead and put me down for $61 million. I'll do it. 61.
Yeah, who's going to leverage that one for you? Dwayne, get a jumbo loan.
Dwayne will help me out, but you know, if that's the range, I think we're kind of good there.
All right, in studio with us, Wes Blanchard. He's the estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority. When we're not buying railroads, we consult him.
It'd be so cool. Have a railroad.
I'm not going to argue with that. I'm a big fan of the choo-choo train. I've always been fascinated with them. I like to jump on them.
And the just city take needs anywhere. The money. I'll help him out.
He's also going to be with this Wes Blanchard fellow across the table at our next Gregory Ricks Live. That's Wednesday, October 12th, so not coming up this week, but next week. It's already October, guys. It feels like 2016 just started like a month ago. Now we're,
it is October today.
Yeah, it's October 1st.
And then this cool air show, fall weather. Wow.
Right.
Now we're going to start lobbing pumpkins soon, huh?
Well,
each other.
Once Halloween hits, it's just holidays until what, next April?
Seems that way.
Yeah, it's just parades and holidays.
Mardi Gras parties.
Yeah, so our
gift giving.
Listeners in the Biloxi area, just you're aware of like what a drag it can be, but you're at a safe distance. That's got to be like the nice little trade. If you get to come to New Orleans whenever you want, but you don't have to have all your roads blocked off and all these parades and everyone misses work and no one gets anything done and business grinds to a halt. Because why? Well, we want to catch this 5-cent bead.
Yeah.
Fun stuff, though. It can be fun. But Wednesday, October 12th, Ruth's Chris in Metairie, 6:30 p.m. Everyone's invited. If you're listening, if you're one of our JBO listeners, if you're one of our News Talk 104.9 listeners, if you're one of our WRNO listeners, come on out to Metairie. Meet the crew. You'll get to meet Wes, the rest of our Total Wealth Authority. You know, Dwayne's coming up at 1 o'clock with his show, Mortgage Gumbo. We've got Dwell Nola, our real estate partners. We've got Jude Heath, Jay Heath Law. Jay Heath, our CPA of the Total Wealth Authority. The whole crew's going to be there. Meet us, get a presentation, have some food, find out if we're a good fit for each other.
Hey, you're bringing up the Gulf Coast there. They have something that is that they're going on right now. They got roads blocked everywhere, heavy traffic. is going to happen to them. It's called Cruising the Coast.
Yeah, the car
it
show.
It starts tomorrow. Like, darn, man. I miss that every year. That'd be cool to go to one year, but, you know, I kind of have to work. You know, it's, wow.
I've gone to Biloxi for vacation. They've got the sweet casinos there, mm-hmm. and they are nice.
They are really nice.
Yeah. All right, so Wes Blanchard, Gregory Ricks, we interrupted a great story that walked in the hallways of Gregory Ricks and Associates this week. Let's pick it right back up there.
So let's start with, okay.
Hey, guys, keep it slow so I can follow this time.
Okay.
Okay.
A spouse inherited the house, her interest. Now you were in the, on the conversation, so there wasn't a will. So, but it was their joint property. So she has half interest, and then his kids have the other.
Yes.
Community half of the property now.
Right. So she didn't so much inherit that property. The kids inherited their father's half. She retained her half of the community.
Correct.
All right.
And the first part of it that came up in the discussion is, you know, she's had to do repairs and upkeep. So on that part, since we have multiple owners of the property, she is residing in it. So she has the use of 100% of it until she dies.
Correct. And so that with regard to the repairs and the sort of necessary maintenance and things like that, she's going to be responsible for them. Again, we kind of touched on it when we answered Barrett's question at the top of the hour. Because it's offset due to her majority use, her 100% use is going to say, well, look, you know, now you're responsible for those repairs. You're the only one who's actually getting to enjoy them anyway. So in that respect, she's going to be liable for ordinary and necessary maintenance and repairs.
Okay, so she can't get them to kick in and share on that.
Right.
The other part is, let's just say the value's $200,000 and the mortgage is $100,000. Make it simple math. We're not far off on the numbers anyhow. She's making the mortgage payment. She's increasing their equity, but she's carrying all the responsibility, and she's done so for about 24 months at this point. And it is a burden on her, but what is their responsibility when you inherit a property in this scenario? And this isn't the only one, but we've just never really addressed it. They don't have to pay the mortgage payment.
So, no, they're absolutely responsible for that payment. There's no doubt about it, because they are owners in the same fashion that she is. Now, she has full ownership of her half. Okay. On the other hand, when you split dad's old half, the kids now have naked ownership, while she has the right of a surviving spouse's usufruct. Okay, so just for a second, set that usufruct aside, because I don't think it really affects the equation here. What we're looking at is responsibility for mortgage payments. So owners are the ones, only ones who can encumber a property, meaning they're the only ones that can pull out a mortgage on it or put a lien on it or anything like that.
Yeah, example, if they won't, all of the parties wanted to refinance it, they all could.
Exactly. So the usufruct or the usufructory can't do that.
Did you say usufructory?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the first time I've
heard. Yeah, I've heard that one before.
So that person who has the usufructory, cannot take out a mortgage on the property because they're not actually an owner. Similarly, it would make sense then that a naked owner can't take out a mortgage on a property and hold their hands up and say, you know what, the usufructory is the only person using it. You need to pay that. That's not how it works. So when you take those facts into consideration, you say, okay, the only people who can be responsible for mortgage payments are owners, whether it be a naked owner or a full owner. In this instance, you have the wife who's the full owner and then the two children who are naked owners. They're still responsible for their portion, their half. Now, each one's responsible for a quarter technically, but depending on what the mortgage and all that says, most of the time, anybody can be held liable for it. But the point is, they're responsible for their half of the mortgage. She's technically only responsible for her half. Now, she's making these payments. She still has the right to be reimbursed by the naked owner. So ideally, what happens is the home is sold. Okay, and when the home is sold, there's a reckoning that happens that says, hey, by the way, over the last 6 years, I've paid exclusively the mortgage here. in turn, you owe me 3 years of mortgage payments. You owe me half. And most of the time, it works out okay, because what happens is they say, okay, well, just take that out of our chunk. You know, instead of us getting $50,000 from the sale, you know, we'll take less.
Well, that's in a great financial situation.
Correct.
This isn't. This is going to be what I brought up more of a conversation, is we need them to make up the back and kick in going forward. And they, you know, and here's when you're inheriting property, and even when it's encumbered with debt, you don't have to inherit it. You could take a pass.
Absolutely.
You know, on it, and they could still do that when asked.
Well, at this point, they've accepted ownership. And so that's what we kind of discussed it when we met with the young lady. And we said, look, when you take ownership of a property through inheritance, you don't just get the good stuff.
You get the bad.
You get the whole kit and caboodle. And so it's good, the bad, the in-between, whatever sort of, you know, rigmarole that comes with it, you have to take ownership of. And it sounds to me as if the kids are just sort of shirking their obligation to say, no, we're just going to sit back and wait for the sale to happen. And when the sale happens, we're going to, you know, push for you to give us our money. But interestingly, in her situation, because she's also got a surviving spouse usufruct, when that sale happens, the proceeds of that sale attach to her as the usufruct. So she now has control.
Because it's a fruit?
Exactly. Okay. So she has control of the entirety of the proceeds. So at that point, she does have a little leverage from that perspective if a sale were to happen. But again, you're saying that happens in the best of financial situations. Where it gets hairy is when you're taking a loss on the property, or I can't afford to make these mortgage payments. I need help. You know,
she can make them, but it doesn't leave a lot of room for life.
And exactly.
In this scenario, and that's what we're working with her on. And we kind of need this addressed, and going to ask them to kick in.
All right, we're talking to Wes Blanchard, the estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority. If you have a financial or estate planning situation and you're not quite sure what to do, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
I know everybody says money can't buy happiness, but it can buy me a boat. Silver bullets. Yeah, and I know what they say, money can't buy everything.
Well, maybe so, but it can buy me a boat. Boats like work. James, you get you a boat, I'll just go out with you. How about that?
No.
We could use my truck to pull it, but you got to do all the boat stuff.
No, I'm just like you. I'll go play on someone else's boat. But you know the problem with the boat has all the problems of a house, all the problems of the car, and the damn thing can sink.
I keep telling y'all, get me the boat, and I got y'all taken care of.
Yeah, we'll buy you a boat. I'll tell you what, this song now makes me think of my daughter, because you played his bumper music in the show. I played his bumper music in my morning show. It's on the radio. Now it got stuck in my head. I can play it at home, and she sings it. She's 4 years old. She's like, buy me a boat. She does the accent, too. Yeah.
This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. We're here from 10 to 1 every Saturday, live radio, phone number. If you have a financial situation, or if you're a usufructuary.
Usufructuary.
Yeah. If you're one of those, it's 260-0995, and I and or Wes will give you some help.
Yeah, we got Wes Blanchard, our estate planning attorney for the Total Wealth Authority, in studio for this hour. On the phone now is Tracy from Dwell NOLA. They're our real estate partners in the Total Wealth Authority, and will be our guest on next weekend's weekly wrap. What you bringing to the table, Tracy? First off, hi, but then what you bringing to the table?
Hey, guys. How are you? Hey. Listen, next week we're going to talk about valuations and negotiations on properties. A lot of times, buyers and sellers, they have apprehension. So sometimes they could be frustrated with the buyer. The seller might be frustrated with the buyer and vice versa. They might be frustrated with their agent. They don't know what to do. So we're going to talk about you know, why we negotiate certain ways and the best ways to negotiate, so that way, you know, they kind of have a little bit of an inside scoop on the way we think about it. And it'll help them when they go to purchase or sell a property.
Yeah, because the big question is, how much is this piece of property worth?
Yes, yes. And there are differing opinions on that. So it's kind of like sometimes a seller might feel it's worth X amount of dollars, and, you know, the numbers show otherwise. So we kind of bring those numbers to the table and try to help explain them best as possible to get them to a sale that's great for everyone.
What if you had a price range of $61 million to $196 million? How do you find that spot? Because I'm kind of wanting to be in at 61.
Yeah, we were talking about the valuation of the public railroad here that's up for sale.
Yeah, well, you're talking about buying or selling? You're talking about buying, right?
Well, the city owns it, and they should sell it, and
like a
railroad, even
yeah,
if it
yeah.
is only 21 miles long.
Because I think Angie's going to buy two railroads this week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a whole nother ball game. But
all right,
it's
just thought I'd throw it out there.
Talk about though. Yeah, we definitely have to talk about it so we can kind of help people through their sales.
Well, would you like to get that account? Wouldn't that be a nice listing to pick up? Your property of the week is a railroad.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, go take care of that herd of dogs. We'll see you next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thank you very much, Tracy. There she is. DwellNola.com for our real estate partners. Love those ladies over there. Can we do the phone real quick? I see you have to jump into something. Let me stop you.
Oh, good. I'm just thinking about my railroad.
I got to stop that train before I get to the... Jerry in Avondale, you're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. By the way, if any of y'all want to be next, 504-260-0995. What's up, Jerry?
Okay. Gregory, I talked to my accountant, and we decided it would be more advantageous to take my Social Security when I'm 66 in July, which will be 2017. Now, what I'm going to have to do, I don't have enough Social Security paying in, so I'm going to have to continue to work, or they'll cut my Social Security down drastically. Now, I plan on taking it in July of next year. Would it be more advantageous if I waited to the next January of the following year, or just go ahead and take it on my birthday?
Well, it sounds like, are you basically saying you're needing to get some more quarters in? You're
My understanding that you have to have so much Social Security quarters paid in. And in order to get the full Social Security, if you're not working, if you're on retirement, if you're retired and getting your retirement, they knock the Social Security payments down drastically, if I have that right.
No, I think we've got a little bit of a disconnect here. How many years have you been a worker? That's how they define it. How many years have you been a worker that's paid into Social Security?
I don't even know. I brought this to my accountant, did analysis. I'm working for a government agency right now, so I'm not getting
State of Louisiana or federal?
I'm not paying any Social Security in.
Okay, yeah. And you're needing 35 years of substantial earnings to get your full benefits. Now, are you talking about turning on Social Security before you turn on the state pension?
Yes.
Okay. Then you're going to be able to draw those benefits, but once you turn on that state retirement, it's going to reduce. It's the windfall elimination provision that's going to affect it. So it's smart to turn that on. You're going to maximize Social Security benefits, but that's changing. You can keep working all you want, but I don't think you're going to get to 35 substantial years.
I'm not, because I'm working for the parish. You're not paying in Social Security.
Yeah, you'd have to have a full-time side job to get there over the years. That's kind of how that's going to go. So how can I help?
Well, my question was, I plan on taking Social Security this coming July. Would it make any difference? Would my payments be increased if I waited to the following January?
Here's the deal. When are you planning to turn on the state's pension?
I can't because then they'll cut my Social Security now.
Okay. How much is the pension going to be?
I'm not sure exactly where it's going to be when I retire, but
but I don't have the full pension. I don't have the
At some point, you are going to turn on the state pension, right?
No.
Never? Social Security is that big in comparison to the state pension?
Yes. I can't. I need the income. I cannot.
Okay.
Because they'll cut it down.
Okay, that helps me. So there is no state pension as far as you're concerned. So
correct.
What gives you more value? The answer is waiting. More you wait, the larger your benefit's going to be.
Okay.
I just can't imagine that you have a very large benefit from Social Security because you've worked and not put into Social Security over all these years.
No,
how many years have you worked for the state?
12.
Okay. Well, you do have some years there, but that's 12 years of no history.
Right. It's not enough. And now, my other question concerning Social Security, would my Social Security benefits be greater if I waited a couple of more months instead of taking it in July, taking it in the following year?
Social Security grows by, on deferral, 8% a year, but it's not credited annually. It's credited monthly. So every month that you wait, it does give you a little bit of increase. But it's not going to give you that increase right when you turn it on. It's going to be the following year that will be credited and made up to you. So you will see if you wait 6 months, it's still when they started, it's going to be the same number as if it was on your birthday. But that following year you get to it, they will make that adjustment and credit it to you.
Okay, so it's a little bit of benefit to wait a couple more months.
Yes.
Okay, well, you answered my question. I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Took us had to go around the elbow to get there, but we got there. It's just confusing because he has that option to defer and then turn it on.
Edward and Wagman, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, talking to James Gregory and Wes Blanchard. How can we help you?
Yes, I'd like to ask Wes, in that situation that you were talking about with the wife and the children about the house, can the children force her to sell the house?
No, they can't. And part of that has to do with her having the surviving spouse usufruct. And so in this circumstance, in this instance, the spouse passed away without a will. And in that regard, that's how the kids came to be the naked owners. But the civil code also says, look, when that happens, the surviving spouse gets a lifetime right of usufruct. So she cannot be forced out at that point. She also has sort of her backup, if you will, being a half naked owner. So there would be, if there were any sort of contention, she's got 2 points on her side as opposed to the kids just trying to force a mom out of the house.
All right, Edward, I hope that helps.
What I want to throw in there, we're talking about Louisiana law. We have a big audience in Mississippi, joint tenant with right of survivorship. Mississippi, we're not having this conversation.
Nope.
I'm James Parker. This is Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks with Gregory, James, and Wes Blanchard on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to Winning It Live. This is the Weekly Wrap with Gregory Ricks. I have James Parker in studio, other host, Wes Blanchard, W.J. Blanchard Law. Man, this has been some great topics today about this usufructuary. Nice. I'm just not going to say it 3 times in a row. That's kind of our new word.
Usufructuary. Got it.
New word of the day. We've not heard it. We've always talked about usufruct. He's got the naked ownership in there, and we've got this story going where she, after his death, retained her half interest of the community. The children got the other half. There's a mortgage, and I just wanted Brent, because we never talk about this stuff, that Wes has assured us they have an obligation. You inherit the equity, but in this case, they're inheriting the debt also, and it has been done through succession. My question is, what did somebody drop? Well, we already know they paid way, in our opinion, I'll say mine, I'll take ownership. They paid way too much in attorney fees for this to not been resolved at that point, too. It's just, that's how I'll define it.
Yeah, it's certainly, and look, you know, it's one of those things when you have a situation like this where the kids kind of come out of nowhere and say, hey, we're just here to sort of collect our things here.
So they got their pieces of a few accounts.
Certainly,
and they claim their ownership stake in that equity.
It would behoove all the parties to address the issues that are absolutely going to present themselves in a situation like that. It's very rare that you have a circumstance where sort of kids just show up out of nowhere and like I said, are here to maybe collect a check and some inheritance, that you don't have some sort of conflict that arises. And so the best idea for everybody involved is to try to address that before it happens, is to plan for it and know, hey, maybe we don't even go down this road if it's not going to be worth our while. So maybe the kids say, hey, if you explain that to them, that, hey, you're actually on the hook for half of this mortgage too. Maybe they say, you know what, we'll renounce our rights to that house then.
That would be our preferred scenario.
Right. And so actually, while I'm on it, though, we just had that last caller come in and he said, look, can the naked owners, can the kids force them out? Well, I told him no. And that's clear as can be. It's clear as day in the code. And it says, look, a person having a share in naked ownership only or a usufruct only cannot force a partition or sale of the property. Okay, so if you're a usufructuary, you can't force it if that's the only thing you have. You have to have a full ownership stake, whether that's 1/4 full owner or 1/8 or whatever it may be. It can't be broken up. You can't have one or the other and try to force
a sale. So she could want to sell, but the others don't.
She can sell. She can, exactly. She has the right to push for it, but the kids are only naked owners. Because she has usufruct.
So she could make the sale happen where
exactly.
they can't.
Exactly. Exactly. Because
okay, that's good to know.
It is. Yeah. And again, it's fair. It's equitable. And for as crazy as some of these default rules are, you know, they're not all the way wild. You know, the legislature did say, look, we're going to operate within this really sort of random structure, but let's still use some logic while we're there. And so that makes logical sense.
Yeah, and now do we have a caller?
We do.
Okay, we'll take that. But I want to shift to joint tenant.
Okay, right. Just put a little flag on joint tenant. Okay. We're going to talk to John in New Orleans. And if you want to be next, 504-260-0995. Hey, John, you're talking to James Gregory and Wes Blanchard. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. Question that I have is, we had my mom passed away about 6 months ago. They have my dad is still alive. They have two houses, one in New Orleans and one in Mississippi. My dad claims Mississippi as his home. My mom claimed New Orleans or Louisiana as her home. Now, I have there's three siblings. So, you know, how do we, and they have about, I guess, you know, close to $1 million in annuities and that kind of stuff. So she died without a will.
What was that value again?
What are we doing?
Million.
Close to a million.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like annuities, I say annuities, but you know, all different kinds of investments.
Okay. Did we?
So my question is, how do we? You know, does my dad have control of everything until he passes away, or does you know? Being that he's in Mississippi and claims Mississippi, is there a difference?
There is. And so, I know what Wes is going to say. The mom resided in Louisiana, so
correct.
Isn't it under Louisiana?
Yeah, and did you say she passed away with a will or without?
Without.
Without. Okay, so what's important to know is, she's a domiciled resident of Louisiana. So the property that she has located in Louisiana obviously is going to be controlled by Louisiana law. Now, if they owned property together in Mississippi, especially real estate, Mississippi law is going to control what happens to that real estate. That's why if you ever hear folks who do own multiple pieces of property, one in Louisiana, one in Mississippi, one in Alabama, whatever it may be, they have to open up probate in all three states or both states as it happens. And that's why, because as far as real estate or immovable property, as it's called, goes, the law of that particular state is going to govern. So to answer your question, your dad now is going to have usufruct as a surviving spouse. Where he resides really makes no difference. It all has to do with where your mom was domiciled at the time that she passed away. So now that Louisiana law is governing, she's going to, or her property is essentially split. So you guys as the kids are the naked owners. Your dad is going to be the usufructuary for the remainder of his life or until he remarries.
What was the marital status at time of her death?
They were married.
Okay, but they domicile each in a different state. Okay.
Correct.
Yep.
I mean, they used to go back and forth. My dad, when he retired, just stayed in Mississippi and just claimed Mississippi as his home, as his residence.
Okay. Does that help you out?
Yeah. So I mean, whatever they have, is it for us three guys, you know, for the three siblings, is it everything split down the middle, and then he gets half, and we get half, and then whatever he wills?
Right. So... as far as the community property goes, and the way it's going to work is he gets his half right away.
Right.
Your mom's half is split three ways between you and, it sounds like, your two brothers. And
right.
Your dad now has usufruct over your share. So you guys at this point own 1/6 of whatever. Each of you own 1/6. That one half split three ways.
Okay.
That probably clears it all up. Yeah. Anything else?
Yep. No, thank you.
Awesome.
Okay. All right.
Awesome.
Cool. Great question. Thanks for the call. Let's even use both of the states that we mm-hmm. are talking to today.
Very timely.
Yeah, that worked out nicely. You want to go to Jim in Mandeville next? Because I'm not going to if y'all don't want to.
Go ahead.
Okay. Jim in Mandeville.
Let him in.
You're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Quick question. Hopefully a quick question. When is it prudent to have an umbrella policy?
Liability.
Yes.
Now, if you're thinking about it, you probably should have it. That's without asking any questions.
What's he talking about? Clue me in, guys. Umbrella policy, liability.
Umbrella, like you've got your auto insurance, homeowners, but he's talking about having an overall liability that's more of a catch-all overall.
Sort of a general liability insurance policy.
Guys, I don't have one of these. Am I doing the wrong thing?
Well, you're doing what most people do. I have an umbrella policy.
Certainly, yeah. If you're in a position to afford the umbrella policy, and especially
it's
as you acquire more
much.
Assets, right, the risk versus reward is certainly in your favor if you can afford it. Definitely want to go ahead and do
it. Jim, this isn't just a random question. Are you doing something dangerous? Are you a stuntman or something?
I wish. I'm doing a lot of dangerous things like driving in New Orleans. But, I was just wondering at what point. I mean, I have a pretty good number of assets, and I've never used it. I've had it for years and years and years, and I just wonder if there was a rule of thumb as to when you should have one and when you no longer need one.
Well, let's put it this way. If your main concern is driving around in New Orleans, and it sounds like, you know, you're kind of referring to the personal injury aspect, maybe. It's better to have it than to not have it, because you'll all want right. it when you need it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks for listening up in the North Shore, Jim. Appreciate it. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. You know, we put down this flag on joint tenant. Can y'all wrap this up? Do it in 20 seconds?
Let's come. Well, hey, you can hang around 5 minutes after the break.
I can.
And we'll
wrap
this
up. We can't just monopolize this whole weekend. Thank you, Wes. Thank you very much. 504-260-0995. You can send us a text message via the Gregory Ricks and Associates app, or you can email us, gregory@gregoryricks.com. I'm James Parker. Joining us in studio, Wes Blanchard, the estate planning attorney. This is Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
This is Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. Doing this for over 6 years. Next June, we can say going on 7 years. Always give the teenage version.
Yeah, like my kids, we're 6 and a half. A lot of shows packed in that half. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Wes Blanchard's in studio just to clean up some stuff we left on the table from the last segment. Then we'll let you get on with your Saturday. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, 504-260-0995. But we were just chatting on the break there. Saints play tomorrow at noon. He's not very optimistic about their chances.
No. It's hard, man. It's hard to be very optimistic. Obviously, I love my team, but
But the Chargers aren't good.
I mean, their offense is still rolling despite, you know, injuries to two of their best players. They still put up points. There's still a relatively high octane offense.
I've got a question then. So you're saying Chargers are bad. Does their defense rank 32nd in salary, the Chargers' defense?
No, it doesn't.
Okay, the Saints rank 31 in pay, $40 million dead space in cap.
45.
Because how do you field a winning team with that kind of dead money where everybody else, you got to play the guys that have more dead money than you if you want to win.
Well, I think
because you're short a lot of players.
Don't you like how we make everything financial, even football?
It comes to that. You can't now, Sean Payton's got to go. Well, I don't know. Give him $30 million that he needs to pick up some defensive players and let's see how this thing goes, then fire it.
Yeah, that's why we've seen a little bit of a talent drain. But look, this is a good chance here. If we're going to have $45 million in dead cap space, we know it's a done season. Drew Brees is taking a huge cap hit. What's he, like $22 million cap hit or something ridiculous like that?
Yeah, the way they redid his contract and all the others they're carrying.
But this is great, though, because let's go ahead and get this guy paid. If it's a lost season anyway, he's probably restructured a couple contracts in the past and, you know, for the betterment of the team. Let's get this guy paid in his last couple of years while it's a done deal anyway.
Yeah, and they did some restructuring on his deal right before the season started. And I'm not entirely familiar at this point with how that changed the cap number or whatever it may have done. But I know going into the season, yeah, he was loaded. I think it was going to be a $30 million cap hit until he did the new deal.
We should have just taken it. We're not going to be able to fill the team anyway.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20. But, I mean, look, when we started the season, you know, aside from the injury to Sheldon Rankins and Kakaha, we were looking, we were going to get a little better.
We're still eating on that tight end they paid all that money to and then traded him, that defensive player they did the giant
Junior
contract
Gallette
with and then had to cut him. And then a whole bunch of smaller ones. But that and the quarterback kind of, you know, time to pay the piper. Mm-hmm. You know, there you go. So don't be disappointed in more losses than wins. That tells the story right there. You can go, oh, it's a play call. We need a defensive coordinator. You know, why is Drew not hitting 100% of his throws? It doesn't matter. You're short a lot of players because of the money.
It's not a football issue. It's not a talent issue.
It's the money.
It's a financial issue.
That's right.
A better financial planning, we would have a season that's not just a throwaway. See how important financial planning is?
See, we just got that cut to the quick really fast there. Okay, back to joint tenant with right of survivorship. So we had this scenario of husband, wife dying, husband is there, there's kids. Now, in Louisiana, the surviving husband in that example would retain his half of the community property, and the kids would each get a third, saying, of the other half or 1/6 of the property. Complicated there. So you've got, he can stay in the house and the kids have naked ownership, but they have an ownership stake. When he dies, they get their other interest. They can't force him to sell, but they could also prevent him from doing that. Like, I need to refinance to do repairs. Well, pops, I'm not comfortable signing off my interest in equity that we hear those stories all the time. Well, let's shift over to Mississippi. Same scenario, husband, wife, three kids, wife dies. Joint tenant right of survivorship is, we can go and cut the story really short here, right, Wes?
Yep.
What happens?
Kicks right over to the surviving spouse. No questions asked, no probate required, nothing.
No naked ownership, no usufruct.
None of that.
Total ownership. And when she's done,
then it kicks on
then
to
the kids. She don't have to get permission to refinance.
Right. And so
anything.
So for the listeners out there, obviously in Mississippi, you're in a much more advantageous situation than the folks here in Louisiana. You know, Louisiana, again, all of this sort of kicks into why getting an estate plan is so important. And, you know, that's the bigger sort of framed issue here, is we're kind of delving into all of the problems that you see when you don't have a will. You know, we're answering all these sort of detail-oriented questions. Well, look, this happened and that happened. What can they do? What can't they do? Well, you know what you can do is just get a will. and all of this is avoided. Now, fortunately, the folks in Mississippi, they don't even have to go do that to a certain extent. It's still always a good idea to get one. But in Louisiana, you can avoid all of this hassle and pass over all of these questions if you just get a will. That's it. That's all you have to do is say, hey, I leave everything to my spouse in full ownership. Everything I have.
One thing, no matter where you live, I think a will gives clarity, and then trusts help bypass probate succession regardless of the state, even more clarity. Another level would even give you total control still after death. And it just, and then that situation, what if you have one die and another dies right afterwards? Then you kind of have a mess there. So I think wills are always important, no matter what, on structure and clarity going forward. And if you have second marriage, other kids, that's all kind of complications, no matter where you live. Worse in Louisiana, yeah, but we're wanting it, you to have clarity.
Correct.
All right, Wes Blanchard is going to be at our next Gregory Ricks live event, not this Wednesday, but next, October 12th, Ruth's Chris in Metairie. Everyone's invited, even if you're listening off of one of our outlying affiliates, if you're listening on News Talk 104, 104.9, come on out. It'll be worth your trip. I also saw that you were at, happy birthday to one a very important staff member at Gregory Ricks and Associates, Ashley. What'd she turn yesterday? Was she 40? That was she turned?
41.
41, there you go.
She will not be talking to you guys anymore. Good old 29 she
29,
is
yeah.
now.
Oh, 29.
Going on 30.
Yes, that's right. She's going on 40. No, I'm just bitter because I wasn't invited. That's all.
Oh, you'll get over it.
Yeah. that's the bitter horn right there. All right, Wes, Godspeed, man.
Thanks, guys.
Anything else we need to cover while we got him in here? Okay, no one called, so we're good. Good to go. Thanks, Wes.
Thanks, Wes.
All right,
great show.
I mean, we're a little behind. You want to just smash the gas here?
Yeah.
Well, we got a phone call? Oh, yeah. We did have a phone call. Is this something that Wes could be of help with? Okay, yeah, this is a Gregory Riggs question.
And we have an email or two.
Yeah, a guy was shy, relayed his question to Angie, our producer. She's going to relay it to us. What was the situation, Angie?
Okay, so he wanted to know if he, let's say he made a salary his whole career of whole, you know, from the time he started working, $60,000. And then right before he retires, like say he's 65, he retires 69, he gets a pay increase of over $100,000. When he gets his Social Security, is the payout going to be more because of that last minute pay increase?
He will get some credits on that back end of that higher contribution to Social Security, but it's not going to be as if he made $100,000. You know, where some jobs, your retirement's based upon what was the highest dollar amount, like federal does, a version of the federal.
California does it too.
Pensions is, okay, boom, you made this pay level, okay, your pension jumps up. No, it's actually, there's several levels to Social Security, three core ones, and it has to do with compensation at different levels and what that third tier gets enhanced because of his bump. But it's based on your 35 best years. Okay, so his last couple of years is going to enhance that. Sweet.
It does give him more of an incentive to continue working and turn it on later because you keep adding those higher credited years and the denominator is going to remain the same, 35.
Yeah, great question. Great situation to get that nice bump. Save some extra money. You're going to need it.
We still look at her in case she has a follow-up. Like, are you done? Are we done with
that?
Was
it.
Okay. All right, Angie, you got me up on the board over there? Because I'm springing this on Gregory. He hasn't even heard it yet.
No.
See, this is how you find people in the financial media you trust. You listen to them. If they start to make sense, you put a little flag down on them and come back to them in these tight situations. And if they continue to be making one of the few people making sense, well, then you found yourself a friend. Rick Santelli is one of our friends. He is not a big fan, as we are, Gregory, of this idea that the Fed's floating of, well, you know, we've done enough ruining the bond market. We need to ruin the equity market next. So this was him yesterday on CNBC.
I look up the board. I see a 159 in 10-year, important level, top of an important range. But really what it means is, at least for today, there's an all clear. You know, there are many lessons to be learned from Deutsche Bank. And I'm not really talking about the ones that you, the viewer or listener on the radio, may be thinking of. My lesson is central banks. Now, I'm not here to say that they've had bad intent. I think all central bankers truly want to help. but please don't help anymore, okay? Let's think about this. So they're bailing out the system after the credit crisis. And what we've had since are years and years of digging more help, finding more help, looking for more free help, easy money. How's it really helped anything? I'll use the same analogy I've used for years. You can't wallpaper over termites forever, okay? Deutsche Bank has plenty of issues we don't need to get into. But one issue that's going to affect not only Deutsche Bank and the European banks, it's going to affect the Japanese banks, the emerging market banks, and our banks, is the fact that the more negative interest rates prevail, the worse profitability is going to be. But it can get worse. And I'll tell you why. Do you think the Swiss National Bank or the Bank of Japan, or even with regard to corporates, the ECB, the other two were stocks, central banks buying into markets, you really think that's a good idea? Let's use Deutsche Bank as an example. Let's say the stock of Deutsche Bank keeps going down. The cocoa bonds keep converting into equity. Everybody keeps blowing it out. What if the central banks all get together and decide, well, okay, we don't want that to happen. Let's buy Deutsche Bank. Or when any other bank or company is in trouble, we'll buy that. Or as you get to political highlight points like election times, you want to keep everything pretty clean. Make sure nothing goes down. Is that the world we really want to live in? Here's where I'm going with this. Janet Yellen recently, and it's all over every blog and every tongue of every trader, is considering the costs and benefits of doing things like other central banks. Maybe buying equities. Maybe buying corporates. It's a bad idea. It's not only the fact of who gets to pick and choose, it will completely and utterly, in every possible way, destroy any value in the marketplace. Completely. It'll be a useless investment. What good is it without price discovery, without people getting together and using the markets to either add to risk or dispense of their risk to actually get a large group of individuals, whether in a group or on an electronic platform, to bid an offer and come up with a true price reflecting the fundamentals of whatever they're trading? A backstop by central banks is not only horrible, and the final joke here is that in order for Janet Yellen and company to do any of that, they would go and have to get permission from Congress. I will just leave it at that. Think about that congressional hearing. Back to you.
Well, thanks. He threw it back to you, Gregory.
You already have other central banks doing this, and it's already affecting equity pricing and risk. And can you imagine the Federal Reserve doing that? That absolutely cannot happen, or everything's out of whack. Some wacky, distorted world, financial world.
Some conflict of interest, like Brainerd, maybe?
Oh, my gosh.
We'll talk about that next. If you have a financial situation, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
And I'm stuck here having a record year.
Welcome back to Winning at Life, the weekly wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, along with James Parker. You have a financial situation? Yes, we're live. We take calls. Mutual funds, that trust, that will, that usufruct, that variable annuity, or that stock called Deutsche Bank. Whatever you need some help with. 504-260-0995.
Carl in Covington, you're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Carl?
Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Ricks. My question is, my wife and I both have a IRA. She's got one in her name only from her, evidently, we but retired, and it's in her name, and I got one in my name. And I have somebody tell me that I should have a trust that would probably solve a problem if something should happen to her. My wife's health is not real good, but if she passes away and she has an IRA in her name, would a trust solve any problems?
I don't know what problem is coming up, but here's the problem with putting an IRA in a trust is you've just blown up the trust. An IRA cannot be in a trust. An IRA cannot, a trust cannot be age 70 and a half. It doesn't have an actuarial life. An IRA has to have a living entity on it, meaning a human. And you can be the beneficiary of her IRA, and that ownership of and control of that IRA goes on to you. Now, you could use an IRA inheritance trust to deal with distributions passing through it to the beneficiary, but the trust can never take ownership of that. Then you have a taxable event, and that's the bigger problem. Is all of a sudden I don't want my IRA I'm inheriting to be fully taxable right now. You don't want that.
Yeah, it's pre-tax money that was put in. So I think it's been a while. I mean, I'm close to 80, and she's 68. So it's been a while since all this has happened with the IRAs, and I think I am a beneficiary to that trust. I mean, to that IRA.
Is she still living, or has she
passed? Yeah, she's still living, but her health is very poor.
One of the main things is go over these beneficiary designations. We can assume they're right, but I've seen a lot of times where they were not correct. You know, I had a client that lost a spouse, and on that retirement money, another relative was the beneficiary of it, not the wife. We don't want that to happen. Check these beneficiary designations and be careful. A trust cannot own an IRA. That's a taxable event. Be careful on that, who's giving you guidance. You may need a trust for other reasons, like your real estate, your savings at the bank, your CDs, your after-tax stocks, accounts, a lot of other reasons. Or you want it to bypass succession, or you might want more privacy. That's reasons to utilize a trust.
Well, that might be something for me to think about, because we have a checking account with quite a bit of money in it, and we have a savings account, both of these in both of our names. And being intaxable, it's been taxed already, the savings account. So a trust might be a help there, right?
Could well be. And I suggest you talk to somebody that's qualified. I'm going to tell you, when you're looking for an attorney, you need somebody that specializes in it, not go down and say, well, you know, this is a guy that handles all of our family stuff.
So is that a special attorney I should be looking at?
Well,
do we know one? Do we know anyone that can handle
Wes Blanchard.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's kind of his thing, is estate planning. You can call my office, 504-832-9200, and we will connect you with Wes.
Okay,
504-832-9200.
I'm out in the yard right now.
Okay.
Let me go
my name. It's Gregory Ricks. You can look me up.
Let me turn the radio off. Okay. What's that phone number?
Okay, it's 504-832-9200.
Okay, that's your office.
That's my office number. You want me to say it again?
Yeah, no, I got it written down.
Right.
I got another question.
Yes, sir.
We have a will, and my wife has no children. She had another marriage, but in the will, she's naming her brother and her sister to get a quarter of everything that we got. And I have two children from my first marriage. My son just passed away in June, but he has children. And my daughter and my son is the other two quarters. Is that a problem any kind of way, the way we have it set up, that we have a quarter to my son's family?
Yeah, if you don't have any other stipulations, those children are getting his interest.
I have to redo my will, I guess, since my son passed away. And his children would probably be the beneficiary to that quarter. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, well, that's how it is now.
Okay, and then my daughter, she would get one quarter, and then my wife, brother and sister would get the other two quarters.
Yeah. Wouldn't hurt to revisit it. Things change over time. Your wife's in bad health, you say.
We need her
to make any changes or adjustments. You're probably needing her to be full mental capacity of sound mind.
Yeah. Well, whatever I do, I'm going to have to bring her with me. With that said,
I've given you some help here, but I would rather you talk to Wes for final determination. I'm pretty good at this, but I am not an attorney. That's why we have Wes Blanchard on the Total Wealth
Authority. You answered my question. See, okay. I know what I do. I got that 832 number, and I'll have to check with that.
Okay. Thank you, Carl.
To Wes.
All right. We look forward to your call, Carl. Appreciate you calling. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. Let's start with an email or a text. Or did we get a...
The text has disappeared. You know, those things do that. You know, have you done the latest update on the iPhone where you get a text, but you can't read it? You have to kind of like...
You do handwriting
like
on it.
Scratch off? Oh, no, but you can actually have a hidden text, and you have to kind of do the...
I do not know what you're talking off. About.
Well, then I'm ahead
you are.
Of you. Okay. Listener says, I have a Roth IRA currently worth $13,000. This is an investment I made years ago and have never contributed to it. He or she doesn't need the money, as I'm receiving a healthy retirement income from other sources. The account is over 5 years old. I'm over 59 and a half, and it's invested in the S&P 500. Given the current state of the stock market, would it be a good idea to liquidate this account, and also considering there are no tax liabilities? Well, if you leave it there, it continues to be a tax-free account that can grow.
Why would they want to liquidate it?
Subject to the market, you might want to get a little bit more conservative on it. Kind of speaking of, you're kind of acknowledging high levels, a lot of things in question, could be more volatility. You could do something more conservative with that if you're wanting to hold the money. Or you could as well start distributions from it, because it's tax-free distributions. But you can also look at it as a cash account. You just might want to put it in some conservative ETFs or money market or something, just to stand pat till you really figure out what you want to do. No consequences to just taking a full distribution of it, but it's no longer going to grow tax-free if you take it all out.
All right, if you want to be next, 504-260-0995. Hey, Brendan, Bridge City, we're going to get to you right after this break. I'm James Parker. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio. Welcome to Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. I'm your co-host, James Parker. 504-260-0995 if you want to jump in. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to go out to Bridge City and talk to Brenda. Hey, Brenda, you're next up. What can we do for you?
How you doing? I've got a simple question for you. Both of my parents are still alive, and they have four siblings. Can one child stop you from selling their on property and anything they own if both of them were to pass?
I got lost in
The verbiage was siblings. Not the parents don't have siblings. They had four kids that are siblings.
Okay.
Okay. Correct. So if one dies and the kids get the naked ownership and the remaining spouse has the usufruct, but if they want to sell the house, can one kid stop that sale?
That's correct.
If the parent that has 50% of the community property we're talking about, or we're talking about all kids are the only owners?
All kids.
All kids.
Oh, so this is both parents have passed.
Yeah.
Okay.
If both parents have passed, can one child stop the other children from selling their property?
They can object. They all need to be in agreement to sell it. It takes that, because they're all having to sign off on it.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to need to be in agreement. Otherwise, it gets really complicated and could get ugly, and then we involve attorneys and a judge. Okay. Yeah, so they need to be on the same page. We had a similar situation earlier in the show we talked about.
Yeah, there's a process to do it, but you have to go to court and override it with a judge.
Okay. And if we were to sit down with them, the best thing to do would be to get a will and get it all put in writing. We all have the say-so of selling their properties once they are both deceased.
Well, you could have the parents basically say, yeah, at our death, we wish the property to be sold and split among the four children. You could actually have the will dictate that's a request. Now, will is a guideline. Now, a trust kind of gives that situation an absolute there. But typically, if you're putting it in a will, those guidelines are going to be honored. But it still can get complicated and somebody could fight it, where a trust is going to see that it plays out that way.
Okay. All right. And I have one other question.
Okay.
If you owned property before you remarried and the property is in your name, you remarry to a person and they have a child, and the person that owned the property before had two kids. The new person that you marry, are they entitled to the property that you had before you married to him?
That is separate property. It's probably titled, separate name. They have probably, if you keep it a separate property, they probably, as a community property marriage, have an interest in the fruits of it, the value increase, but don't have an interest in the exact property. And it's just like your bank account. It's separate property. If you don't have a prenup or pre-marriage agreement, they're going to have an interest in the fruits of that, meaning the growth.
Okay. All right. Well, y'all answered my question. I'd appreciate it.
Hey, if you want some further follow-up, once again, I'm not an attorney. That's why we have Wes Blanchard on the team, and you can reach him at 504-832-9200 weekdays.
Thanks, Brendan, Bridge City. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. Gregory, let's relive one of the great highlights from the week. This is Senator Garrett from New Jersey talking to Janet Yellen at a congressional hearing. They're dragging her out in front, and he's kind of whipping her up a little bit because there may be a conflict of interest here on why they insist on not raising the rates all year when they told us there would be four. So Garrett's focusing on one of the Fed chairs, Brainard.
But it was reported earlier this year that Fed Governor Lael Brainard contributed the maximum amount to the Hillary Clinton campaign. And she did so while she was a sitting member of the Fed board. And there was numerous reports that have come out, media reports, stating that the governor is angling for a top job with the Clinton administration if Hillary wins. So some basic questions, knowing that's all out there on the table. Because of the appearance of conflict and impropriety here, has Governor Brainard ever offered to recuse herself from voting at the FOMC? Has she? Yeah.
Governor Brainard, like all of us, is subject to the restrictions of the Hatch Act.
Right. So has she offered to recuse herself because of her political involvement? The answer is no. Have you ever asked the governor? I'm sorry.
The Hatch Act does not prohibit political contributions.
I get that, and so, but we see the appearance of the conflict, and so it's a basic question: has Governor Brainard ever offered to recuse herself? And the answer is no. Have you ever asked Governor Brainard to recuse herself because of her close involvement with the campaign and making contributions? Have you ever asked?
She's acting in a way that is permitted by the rules subject to.
Right.
And so each one of us has to decide.
I understand that. So the answer
for ourselves.
The answer is she has never offered to recuse herself. The answer is you have never asked her to recuse herself. To your knowledge, has Governor Brainard been in contact with the Clinton administration, or Clinton campaign, regarding a potential job in a potential future administration? Are you aware of that at all?
I have absolutely no awareness of that.
There have been published media reports talking about that, so you're not familiar with those media reports.
What's important to me is whether or not in our decision-making, our collective decision-making, I see politics being brought to bear in reasoning about our decisions, I have never seen that on the part of any of my colleagues.
If you learn that she has had communications with Clinton as far as trying to get a job, would that change your opinion as to whether she should be asked to recuse herself?
I don't think that there is a conflict of interest.
Yeah, quick Google search.
Really? No, you don't think there's a conflict of interest?
Right. Quick Google search. She is the leading contender for Treasury Secretary, should Hillary win. That's the only, really the only name that's being bandied about. There were some other names, but then Hillary Clinton, after those reports came out, said, no, you know what? I'm really looking forward to having the first female Treasury Secretary. And it was just kind of like a, oops, now we know who she wants. And then you go ahead and you look in Brainerd's past. What was she doing in the 90s? She was the undersecretary of the Treasury for a fellow named Bill. What's his last name? What was that?
Clinton.
Ah, that was what it was.
He runs the Clinton Youth Network.
No, he runs that great charity that helped all the people, the foundation.
There's a big foundation.
Yeah, so no conflict of interest. What do you mean conflict of interest? And look, Republicans, before you get on your high horse, if we don't end this Fed, what is it, Politburo of our monetary system, in 4 years, it's just going to be the opposite party raking your guy over the coals for doing the exact same thing. The solution here isn't to put power in the hands of the other party. It's to divest power from the Fed.
They are a wrecking ball through the system now that is just going to keep creating havoc.
Well, in the last minutes that were released from the Federal Open Market Committee, we talk about them all the time, the FOMC, they had their meeting a couple Wednesdays ago. They said the Fed expects the target rate by the end of next year, I'm sorry, 2018, to be 1.5 percentage points higher. That's six increases of at least a quarter point.
Over 2 years?
Yeah, for all of 17 and 18.
Well, that's really dialing it back from four. If we go back 2 years and what they said the expectation was, that was eight over 2 years, and they've only done one, and we expect them to do maybe one.
Yeah,
and that's dialing it back because it's a little more than 2 years, but not only six.
Just absolutely back reeks. Then this just the most corrupt thing. Yeah, we got 1 minute here.
You're going to play that other sound piece when we come back, right?
Well, same. Oh, I was going to have the discussion with you. Do we do NUA? Do we do the reduction of the 4% rule to the 2.5% rule? You want to hear Garrett versus Jack Lew?
I want to hear that. When we come back, we're going to jump right into that.
All right. So the same guy you just heard kicking Janet Yellen around like we all wish we could do. No, just answer. No. Just answer the question. No. That's not what I asked. Answer the question. Well, he's going
to
take.
I love that. How when they're before the committee, how they figured out to limit the questions they're going to be asked.
Well, they only get 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Each guy gets five.
So
minutes.
You got. I'd rather explain the Hatch Amendment to you in detail instead of answering your question.
Senator Garrett versus Treasury Secretary Jack Lew. If you have a financial situation, you got one segment, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to Winning It Live, the weekly wrap. We had Catherine few minutes ago, download the Gregory Ricks and Associates app. You can do so. Just go to your app store and do a search, download it, and connect to the radio show. And if you can't hear us on the feed, you can connect to the stream. Look, we've done something creative today, second day in a row, Facebook Live. We're streaming, so you not only can go listen to us on iHeartRadio or your local station, you could just go listen to us on Facebook.
You'll watch us.
Listen and watch. You get this both worlds with the Winning at Life radio now because you can stream and watch the show Facebook Live. We're also doing it on Periscope. We just seem to have a little bit of trouble here at this studio, which everything works really good for the weeknight show that we do at 7 as well.
Yeah, Periscope kept pooping out on us, so I just didn't turn it back on about 20 minutes ago. One other piece of audio. I'm loving this Senator Garrett guy. I've never even heard this name until last week. He drug out Treasury Secretary Jack Lew, and they're discussing some, financial, we call it extortion. They call it fines that have been passed around the banks, whether it's Deutsche Bank, whether it's Wells Fargo, whether it's Chase, Bank of America. But this one, let's talk about Citi. Citi. Does Jack Lew have a connection to Citi? Senator Garrett's about to take care of this.
New Jersey, Mr. Garrett, Chairman of the Capital Markets Subcommittee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Secretary, I think it's fair to say that all of us in Congress, myself included,
are outraged at the activity that occurred over at Wells Fargo, that I know you're very familiar with, over a number of years. The entire incident now has a number of people clamoring for regulators to be tough when they finalize the incentive compensation rules under Section 965 of Dodd-Frank, which I'm sure you're familiar with. The current proposal is intended to limit compensation to financial firms and includes provision that would require something called clawbacks of compensation for certain high-level executives that could go back as far as 7 years. You know, but like a lot of things for the other side of the aisle, when it depends on just what executives we're talking about here when this happens. And so let me give you one example. You, Mr. Secretary, you joined Citigroup back in 2006, and by 2008, you became the chief operating officer of the Citigroup Alternative Investment Unit, which at that time managed $54.3 billion. Then the Alternative Investment Group began to do what? Hemorrhage money that year, and by the end of 2008, Citigroup had laid off more than 50,000 employees. The stock price dropped by 75%, and then, of course, they were bailed out by who? The American taxpayers to the tune of $45 billion. Then, to add insult to injury, last year the SEC announced that two Citigroup affiliates, including the one where you were the chief operating officer, agreed to pay $180 million to do what? To settle charges that your unit defrauded investors. So, you were the senior officer at Citigroup, unit which lost money that contributed to the bank's near collapse, and which later was charged with defrauding investors. Talk about a legacy. Was any of your...
That's a lot smaller fine than Deutsche Bank is dealing with.
Yeah, and I like what he's doing here. He's like, yeah, well, I just noticed a little double standard here, a little hypocrisy. And just to use an example here, Treasury Secretary, we're going to look at you.
I love that.
You're Exhibit A in corruption and hypocrisy as far as the federal regulations go of these banks and all these clawbacks, and we're going for little people, and we're going to take down these evil, corrupt bankers. Dude, you were just a banker 7 years ago.
In your officer at Citigroup, unit which lost money that contributed to the bank's near collapse, in which later was charged with defrauding investors. Talk about a legacy. Was any of your compensation at Citigroup ever clawed back? That's a yes or no.
Congressman, I am proud of...
First off, that's not a yes nor a no, but...
my record implementing financial reform.
So was any
hard
of...
For,
I'm not asking that, Mr. Secretary. Let's just get to the question. I saw how you did not answer the chairman's question. Simple question. Was any of your money... Your seven-figure compensation package ever clawed back for the time that you were the chief operating officer?
The issues regarding my compensation have been well worked over.
So then it's an easy answer, Mr. Secretary.
I've answered many questions.
So, look, the fact that he's not answering the question lets you know he's just guilty of sin. He's a guilty dog.
Yeah, but just say no. It won't
clawed
back.
I was paid in a way that is well understood and disclosed.
So,
I'm telling you that my service is... in this role,
Mr. Secretary,
has been to make
please
sure
answer.
I know it sounds like Garrett's being rude, but he only gets 5 minutes with these guys. And so if Jack Luke can sit there and filibuster about the Hatch Act or my compensation package was thoroughly reviewed, he's just wasting time so he doesn't have to go down the road where he's getting exposed here.
Put rules in place that work going
Mr.
forward.
Mr. Secretary, simple question.
We're almost 3 minutes into this clip. We haven't got the yes-no answer yet. Well, there was a one-minute setup, so we've been trying to beat an answer out of this guy for 2 minutes.
You were paid...
What's that Maxine Waters in background? You don't have to answer.
You
that.
Don't have to answer.
Shut up, Maxine.
There,
I backed it up.
In your 5 minutes.
Here goes.
Simple question. You were paid.
Shut up.
Answer. Your unit was defrauded investors.
Congressman,
was any of your money ever clawed?
I was not subject to any action of any kind because no
so
one has ever asked any questions that led to that, and
so the
or
answer,
will they?
See, Mr. Secretary, simple. The answer is no. None of your money was compensated.
And let's remember what my role was.
No, let's not.
When you were the chief operating officer.
I was responsible for administrative activities, not for designing risk products. So let's just remember.
Really? You were a senior executive. Would the proposal proposed incentive compensation rules capture or impact any of your compensation if those rules were in place back then?
I am not aware of anything that relates to me personally, but I also am not directly involved in writing the rules, so I can't tell you exactly where they are. I have urged the regulators
Should the rules be such that senior executives, and Elizabeth Warren doesn't make differentiation between COOs and CEOs. She says all senior executives should have clawbacks.
Is
she wrong?
The questions that have been asked in designing these rules have been, how do you align incentives for risk-taking?
That's not the question. We can have another five minutes.
That is what the driving issue is. How do you make sure that there's not an incentive?
Well, here's one. Okay, let me ask you this. Here's an alignment.
And that's the right question. Mr. That's Secretary, what we've been pushing.
Mr. Secretary, thanks. Here's one, the alignment. When you left there, despite all the hemorrhaging and the taxpayer bailout, you received something called a bureaucratic parachute. You had a promise in your contract that you would be paid $944,000 if you took a high-level position in the U.S. government. Hey, I guess you got that, didn't you? Was that a payment contingent upon you doing and your unit doing a good job? Does that contingent upon the fact whether or not there was any fraud in your unit, or did you just get paid regardless?
Congressman,
first off, what do you think he's going to answer, yes or no? You think he's going to answer that?
My compensation was based on my performance at the job. The only thing that provision said was I didn't lose my last year's pay.
The performance of your job, the company lost 75% stock. It went down.
Congressman, you don't know what my job was.
Really?
Right, he thinks he's got him busted right here. Here's where Lou slipped up.
That is a good response.
He got emotional, though. Did you hear? He's been cool and calm, and I'm just going to try and filibuster, and I don't care if this guy insults me. I'm just going
to
answer.
And then he changed it to a question.
Yeah, and then he goes, you don't even know what my job is.
Well, yeah, I do. It's in the disclosure as to what you are. You were the coordinator for all the units, oversee coordination between operations, technology, human resources, legal, financial, regional departments. Seems like you had your finger on every single aspect of the company. I guess you're telling that you're not responsible for anything.
Well, that certainly backfired, didn't it?
So, Mr. Chairman, I'll end with this. I want to make it clear for the record that so long as you are a high-ranking Democratic official, you can make all the money that you want on Wall Street, but if you're not one of them, then you have to play by the rules if the company collapses.
Yeah, until we restructure the Fed, don't get excited. In 4 years, it's just going to be the opposite party beating up their opponents, too. What are we going to do about this thing, Gregory?
Yeah, Senator had him against the ropes right there at the end, pounding away.
Oh, and these things are usually so boring, and it's just full of people gassing each other.
Yeah, he thought he had the Senator. You don't even know what my job is. Well, actually, I do.
Yeah, in fact, it's on a piece of paper in front of me. Glad you brought that up. All right, I want to remind you our next live event, not this Wednesday, next Wednesday, October 12th, Ruth's Chris in Metairie, 6:30 p.m., Gregory Ricks Live. The last event we did was women only. Men are invited back to this one again. Actually, everyone's invited back to this one again. Did you change up the presentation a little more? Because I know we got a new little intro video. I saw some new slides in there. Talk about the evolution of Gregory Ricks Live.
Look, we always look at what's going on in the present and what do we see coming, and we learn from previous attendees. We learned a lot from the women's event last week. So there'll be a couple of more tweaks and some great information, and we got to fit 3 hours worth into less than 60 minutes.
And the fun part for us on the show is when people show up, they write out the comment cards, and this is a great way to get just a bead on what your average do-it-yourself investor or guy
out there. One of my favorite parts.
Yeah, and then in future shows, we'll be reading back some of the comment cards and getting answers for those. So, again, Wednesday, October 12th, Ruth's Chris in Metairie. Everyone's invited. I don't care if you're listening in Biloxi. I don't care if you're listening to Mississippi or over in the Baton Rouge area. It's worth the drive out. If you want to reserve your seat, go to GregoryRicks.com. Get the Gregory Ricks & Associates app. Or the office number is 504-832-9200. Stay in that seat. Coming up next, Mortgage Gumbo with Dwayne Stein, another member of the Total Wealth Authority. He'll be at the event. He's got some mortgage info for you. In the meantime, your home away from show. The show is GregoryRicks.com and the Gregory Ricks & Associates app. I'm James Parker. This has been Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks on iHeartRadio.
With Gregory Ricks is copyrighted by Gregory Ricks for the private use of our audience. Any unauthorized use of this broadcast without express consent by Gregory Ricks is prohibited.